A new documentary, My Kid Could Paint That, examines the career of a young artist named Marla Olmsted. She started painting at the age of 2. As a toddler, she was represented by a New York gallery. Critics called her a prodigy when she was 4. That designation caught the attention of Megan Daum, the columnist for the Los Angeles Times, who joins us now from Los Angeles. You can find a link to her column at our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And Megan Daum, nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation today.
Great to be with you, Neil.
And if you'd like to join our conversation on what is and what isn't a prodigy, give us a call, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. And Megan Daum, tell us a little bit more about Marla Olmsted. How was she discovered and what does she paint?
Well, I had heard about Marla, from time to time over the last few years. But I just want to be clear that I wrote the column chiefly as a response to this film that's directed by Amir Barlev called My Kid Could Paint That, as you mentioned. And what really interested me about the whole issue enough to kind of start thinking about it so much is that it asks a fundamental question and asks, you know, what is art? And in the case of Marla, there's all sorts of kind of tangential, I can't even speak on the phone to you this morning, issues surrounding her, but it's really a perfect distillation of the difficulty many people have in understanding abstract art and then, you know, as an extension, the way it's marketed. So There's a lot of issues kind of swirling around Marla.
Yeah, you're talking about abstract art. Again, she is not the first, quote-unquote prodigy. There have been examples in the past of, I think elephants painted abstract art and gorillas, too. There's some degree of comfort that some people have because we're so discomforted by abstract art to say, well, look, a 2-year-old or a 4-year-old is just as good as Jackson Pollock.
Yeah, I mean, there's something very comforting about that notion, and I think for many of the people who collect Marla's work, and she does have collectors. I mean, she, I believe, to date has sold over $300,000 worth of paintings. But for the people who really are moved by her work, they talk about buying a piece of childhood or sort of capturing childhood. And, you know, in a way that sort of runs counter to much of the experience of looking at non-figurative art. There is something for many, not for all, but there is something that is kind of inherently alienating about that. So I think that Marla really mitigates that for a lot of people.
And as I understand it, she started painting. Her father is an artist, and he was working on one of his canvases when she was 2 years old, set her up in front of a canvas of her own so that she would keep herself busy so he could do his work.
Yeah, I mean, the way the story goes, and again, I'm reiterating what I saw in the film. I have not seen Marla's work in person, and I haven't done any reporting about her, anything like that. But the way it's told in the film is that when she was not even 2, her father set her up at an easel so he wouldn't be distracted from his own work. And she was very excited by it, and she's painting the way any young child does. She makes some paintings. The parents, being parents, put a painting up on the wall. Eventually a friend comes over who happens to own a coffee shop, says, wow, what a neat painting. Why don't I put this up in my coffee shop? Again, this is all kind of in the just for kicks stage. And people started asking about the painting and wanting to buy it, and they just sort of randomly assigned a price to it. I think it was $250. Somebody bought it, and the next thing they knew, there was a gallery owner in Binghamton who was interested in showing her art. She had an exhibit. There was a local newspaper item about it that got picked up by the New York Times, and I think we can imagine, the way the snowball effect would go from there.
Mm-hmm. And there were skeptics, too, including a piece that was done on 60 Minutes, too.
Yeah, I mean, what happened, the Marla story, like I said, has many components, and the sort of main, place where it makes a sharp left turn happens when 60 Minutes 2 did a profile of Marla and her parents, and they asked a sort of child psychologist who had a specialty in visual art to observe some footage of Marla painting, and that expert concluded that she did not exhibit the signs of a prodigy. And then questions started to be raised as to whether Marla's father was helping her. There seemed to be a discrepancy between the finished products that you saw in galleries versus, what you saw her on, home video painting. And, a lot of stuff comes up around this. I mean, again, what really interests me about this case is not whether or not Marla is authentic, but really what her celebrity says about the way we we evaluate art and mm-hmm. how we attempt to quantify what may in fact not be quantifiable.
Well, one of the ways when you look at the work, for example, of a Mark Rothko, a lot of people say to become an abstract artist, you must first master techniques of drawing and the kind of painting that, a realistic painting, that be able to do all that, as Mark Rothko was, for example, able to do.
Right.
You can't then just start as a Jackson Pollock.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, to be a modern dancer, ostensibly, you have to be a ballet dancer first. I mean, you know, this is just sort of the building blocks of any sort of creative pursuit, or any sort of pursuit, really. I mean, you know, these are questions, I think, that may ultimately not be answerable. You know, you mentioned the animals before, and, you know, it's dangerous to start comparing monkeys and elephants with children. But, you know, there was, I think, the most famous example, there was a chimpanzee in the 1950s named Congo, and his, the animal behaviorist Desmond Morris, who was sort of, you know, the close keeper of Congo, organized an exhibition, I think it was in London, of abstract paintings by Congo. And you can actually, you know, dig up some very amusing footage of art critics looking at this chimpanzee's paintings and assuming that they're Kandinsky's or whatever, and you know, putting $1 million price tags on them, and then being quite embarrassed when they're informed that they were by a chimpanzee. So, you know, I mean, there are amusing sort of ironies and you know, ways of kind of being snarky about all of this. But as I said, it really points to some very, very fundamental and fascinating and probably not really answerable questions.
Megan Dahm of the Los Angeles Times is with us on the line. If you'd like to join our conversation about, well, what is art and what is prodigy? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. If you tuned in hopes of hearing Christopher Hitchens talking about Thomas Paine's Rights of Man, well, we hope to hear that, too, as soon as Mr. Hitchens arrives at our studio, which he has yet to do. In the meantime, we're talking with columnist Megan Dahm of the Los Angeles Times. We also planned to speak with her today as well. This on a column that she wrote, there's a link to it at our blog. You can get there at npr.org/blogofthenation, about a young artist, a four-year-old, and about the question, really, of what is art and how we perceive art. And we have a caller on the line. Rock is with us. Rock is calling from Arizona.
Hello, Neil.
Hi.
I just had a little quick story to relate. Many years ago, I am an artist, by the way, years ago, William Wilson, who was then an art critic for the LA Times, wrote an article describing this exhibit he'd gone to down on La Cienega Boulevard. And he talked about how it was apparent from the art that this artist was influenced by Zen Buddhism because of his minimalist use of colors and his subject matter and all that. And, of course, everybody took this for granted. Then, a week later, a reporter for the Santa Ana Register in Orange County interviewed this artist, and William Wilson had not interviewed this artist, but this reporter did, and he asked him, he said, were you influenced a lot by Zen Buddhism, as William Wilson said? And the guy said, no, I'm Christian. Then he said, well, what about your minimalist use of color? He said William Wilson indicated this showed that, and the guy was Japanese or Chinese, the artist, excuse me, and he said this also would indicate sort of the minimalist attitude of Buddhism. He said, is that why you use such a minimal palette? And the guy said, no, I didn't have enough money to buy any more colors.
Well, that's a funny story, Megan Dahm, along the lines of what you were talking about, the art critics reviewing the works by the Gorilla Congo. Rock, I guess it's art is in the eye of the beholder a lot of the time.
Oh, I find that, yes, or in the art of the pocketbook.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much.
You bet.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can get another caller in. This is CJ. CJ's with us from Illinois.
Yes, hi. I'm calling because I just have a comment relating to how children who are labeled as gifted or a prodigy in one way or another eventually will not be a child anymore. And it's important for us as parents and as people who are adults in that child's life to make sure that that label that's being given to them is not going to adversely affect them later in life when maybe their skills catch up to their age level.
Yeah.
And I'd like to know what the person's opinion is of that.
I wonder, do you have thoughts on that, Megan Dahl?
Well, I don't think anyone could argue with that. I mean, I do want to point out that you know, anybody who sees this documentary, my kid could paint that, you know, really will be struck by the fact that there aren't any real villains in this story. There aren't any at all. I mean, Marla's parents, particularly her mother, come across incredibly sympathetically. You know, everybody in this town, even the people who, you know, could be construed as really manipulating her or the situation, never wanted to sort of do anything to harm this child or, you know, were out to get her in any way. And so I think that this is really a phenomenon, a sort of larger media phenomenon. This doesn't really boil down to individuals, and especially it does not boil down to Marla. I mean, she doesn't know, you know, it's clear from this film, she has no idea what's going on. And in fact, when my observation was when she paints, she doesn't appear to have any sort of agenda, which to me, I think, indicates that she's probably not a prodigy. I mean, aside from the question of whether or not you can be a prodigy in abstract art, which is probably another debate.
Obviously, in something like even a pianist or certainly mathematician places, those are fields of effort where indeed there have been prodigies, but they're kind of measurable.
It's quantifiable, and I think if you're a chess prodigy or a math prodigy, that can be measured because you're better than an adult, for instance.
Yeah.
And something like abstract art, or, I mean, I make a joke in the column about performance art. I mean, you know, I say this sort of glibly, but, you know, who's to say that the kid who doesn't cover himself in maple syrup and sticks styrofoam peanuts all over himself doesn't get deserve an NEA grant? I mean, you know, you can kind of extrapolate on and on, but, you know, it's maybe worth thinking about.
CJ, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. And Megan Dahm, we owe you big time. Thanks very much for being with us today.
You bet.
Megan Dahm, a columnist for the Los Angeles Times. Again, you can find a link to her column at our website at npr.org/blog of the nation.